Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another broadcast of The Ron Shaw Show on the Artist First Radio Network. The Shaw Show Redemption Hour. All past broadcasts are archived. Visit artistfirst.com. And now, here's your host, Mr. Ron Shaw.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to The Ron Shaw Show, and I am Ron Shaw. Tonight, we're going to have... This young man's been on my show before, and it took a while to get him on the first time. It's been, I don't know, what, 6 or 9 months or so since he's been on. And he's from Texas. In fact, I think he's there right now. And he's a poet. He's an author. He's a four-time, what I understand, what I read, number one best-selling poet. Four times he has been. And his name is Richard M. Niddle, Jr. And, Richard, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Oh, thank you, Ron. It's good to be back. I loved it. And, yeah, four times. It's been amazing. I've had four books hit that number one in epic poetry, and it's been awesome. I thank everybody out there that even reads my writing. I didn't think when I first started that anybody read it anyway, but I just kept on writing, and I love it. It's been an amazing trip so far.
Well, tell the folks some more a little bit about you, other than you write poetry and you got books out there. But tell us about Richard Niddle, about your past, about your upbringing, or whatever. Whatever you want to tell the folks, because I'm sure they're interested in that.
Well, I was born and raised out of Los Angeles for 38 years from California. Pretty much had a basic, childhood. Joined the military, and I got three honorable discharges because I had two from the Navy, one in the Army. I got a little bored there in between.
Yeah, I heard that.
And then I've also been for 7 years a PRCA bull rider, riding bulls. In my younger days, now I run from them, and that was actually quite a fun thing to do. And then of course my son Ryder. And that was why it took so long to get on the show, if you remember last time.
Right.
I was fighting for my son, who wasn't my DNA, and we actually won. I won rights to be able to see him as a non-custodial parent. But since then, I've actually moved into Point, Texas, and he actually lives with me and his mother full-time, and it's been wonderful. He's just growing and just becoming a wonderful little boy. It's been awesome.
Well, now, okay, let me back up a second. Bull riding.
Yep.
Did you ever get hurt? Did you break your ribs or your leg?
Thank the Lord that, I had a lot of bruises and a lot of bangs, but I never broke a bone. I mean, I had some fractured ribs. That was about it. For some reason, I've been very lucky when it came to injuries, things like that. And my last bull rider tour was in California. It was in Irving. It was a championship rodeo, and if I would have made it, I probably would have went to Vegas that year. But I was too busy trying to sign autographs and being the cool guy, and wasn't really paying attention, and got my butt handed to me, let's say, and got hung up on the bull, spun around for quite a bit, got stomped on. And as soon as they got me up and I got off, I said, I'm done, and retired. Goodbye. And that
sometimes
was about it.
The bull wins, right? Yeah.
Oh, and he won pretty good. I had a couple cracked ribs and a bruised tibia, pretty down deep on my thigh. That I think that bruise probably lasted about a year.
Oh, they hurt. Yeah, they hurt bad.
It was really bad. But it was fun. I I've always enjoyed it. I'm one of those people that if I wanted to try something, and I tell people all the time, never give up on anything that you love. No matter what anybody says, especially if you're the only one that believes in it, never give up on it, because I've seen some dreams of mine come true, and it's been like I said, an amazing ride the last 2 years.
Was that when you started writing poetry 2 years ago?
2 years ago, that's it. The story behind that, I don't even know if you know the whole story with that.
Maybe not the whole story, but I know good enough. Go ahead.
At that time, it was a very bad time in my life. I was an addict, and I was addicted pretty heavily. I had a rider. His mom was there, but she was also an addict and living on the streets a couple times, so it was very kind of difficult in that situation. my best friend, David, of 35 years, had passed away. And it really hit me pretty hard. And 4 days later, my uncle Bill died, who's my good friend. About a week later, a girlfriend, a really close friend, OD'd and passed on. And then about a week later, my ex had taken Ryder. And that was, so I had four people that were the closest I've ever had in my life just gone. And I took my own life. And it's kind of hard to talk about that. But when I woke up and what I saw, and I'm writing my story about it now because it's a very difficult one to write and to for people to understand, but what I saw was the most beautiful light I've ever seen in my life. And when I was sent back, all of a sudden I was awake and I started hearing these whispers in my head from my friends that had passed away, and I just started writing. And in the beginning of the writing, there was a lot of dark writing about demons and you know, addiction and sorrow and regret, and it just took off, because before that I never even wrote a poem. I never wrote a lick. I didn't write anything. And since then, it's, you know, I have six paperback novels out right now with poetry, eight altogether, because I have two Kindle only epic poems that I've written. And I have two more coming out here in the next probably 15 to 30 days. And I just keep on going, and it just keeps getting better, and I'm getting more and more fans out there who I absolutely love. It, without them, you know, of course, we're nothing. But it's been wonderful. As far as poetry goes, and I tell people all the time, you know, poets are here to heal a broken world, but we're here to heal ourselves too. And I think that anybody and everybody out there is a poet. The key is trying to find out what unlocks that poet in them. And mine was with Ryder and the death of my family. And ever since then, it's like I said, I don't really think that hard about poetry. It just comes, and I write two or three a day. And it's been very healing for me, very, very healing. And I get a lot of fan mail about, wow, you know, thank you so much. And, you know, I was at my last string, and thank you for that poem. And, you know, you really helped me and saved my life. And I kind of have to shy away from that, because I tell people a lot that, you know what, I'm only the pen in which God writes. And, you know, and I'm glad, and I'm very happy this is happening. But it's also been a very difficult, because I'm a very kind of humble person when it comes to that. And it's just been wonderful. That's all I can really say about it. It's been a great experience.
Well, and let's go back.
Okay.
I'm going to take you back, Sam, all right?
Okay.
Now, your addiction, how long did that last, and what was it? What, you mind telling? What drug?
No, you know, the hard part for me is I didn't become an addict until probably about 40 years old. I never did really drugs until then, and it was meth, and I have to, you know, I'm out there, and I'm still trying to fight the addiction. I find it's very difficult to get away from it, and I think every once in a while you slip back a little bit, and then you fight your way through. And any addict would tell you that when you're an addict, it's for life. It's not something you can just pack the bags and walk away. You have to work on it every single day. I mean, you have to really, really pry hard in your heart and your mind, and really believe in your Creator, because if you don't, you'll never beat it. Mm-hmm. And the thing I tell people a lot is you have to take responsibility for your own actions. Nobody out there is putting that drug inside you except for yourself. And if you really want to quit, you need to stop blaming everybody else but yourself. And I think that's what's really helped me, and the writing also. Because if you know it, and you've read quite a few of my work. And
oh, yeah.
I read a lot. I do a lot of, I mean, a lot about addiction, but I also do a lot of love poetry too. But yeah, I still stick with the same thing, at least. Two or three out of every poem, out of the books, you'll see an addiction poem.
Yeah.
But I've also been diagnosed with PTSD severe, and I'm clinically depressed with clinical depression. So it's another thing that I try to fight on top of the addiction. Now, it wasn't caused by the addiction. It was caused by, at 41 years old, I had five bypasses. And which was a genetic disorder. Never knew I had that. And when I went to the doctors and we found out, they didn't know I was even walking or alive. And they saved my life. And so the bouts of depression really do kick in. And people, my fans know that. They can tell when my depression kicks in or my PTSD. And it's been very, the older I get, it seems like the harder it is to control.
Wow.
And it is.
You're fine.
But other than that, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah. You got three fronts going there, Rich.
Right.
You shouldn't fight three fronts. Come on, man. Okay, now, wait a minute. Now, when you decided that that's it, you didn't want to be around this place anymore, right?
Right.
You were ready to leave this plane.
Mm-hmm.
And you chose to try to take your life, and were you brought back at the hospital, or what happened?
No, to be honest with you, it was a dirty motel room in a very drug-infected part of town. And, I'm not going to go into how it was doing, but I know for a fact that I did pass on. And when I woke up, I thought I was going to see fire and brimstone, or I wasn't going to see anything at all. I just was done.
Yeah.
But when I woke up, I saw the most beautiful light I have ever seen in my life. And in fact, on my second book, which is called Out of the Darkness, A Poet's Journey, there's a picture. And if you look at that picture, you will understand it's a very, the lighting in it was not taken where the sun was at. Let's put it that way. And the story behind that one is there was a poem I wrote about Ryder at the time, and it was called Hope, A Prayer for Ryder. And it was talking about I was sitting on a bench at the park one day at the same bench that Ryder and I used to play, and it would go on into the story of what we used to do. So a week later, after I wrote that poem, I went to the same park. It was at about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. It was dead. Nobody was around. And it was just me, and I was feeling a little eerie because I'd never seen that park so empty. And so I go to the bench, and I'm sitting there, and I feel something brush my face. And I started smelling this very sweet smelling, I don't know what it was. So I jumped up, and I was like, what's going on? And all of a sudden, I see this light start masculating in front of me above this bench. And I was taking pictures. I was already taking pictures, so my phone camera just kept clicking, clicking, clicking. And it was an angel. Her name was Michelle, and I heard the same voices when I had passed on. It was the same light, the same thing I saw. And the kicker here is, when you're by yourself, you have a few pictures. Okay, it could be a thing of light, but her mother and her aunt lived right across the street from it because that's where we lived. And I had to run over down the street and say, hey, guys, guess what? So I knocked on the door, and they said, Richard, I can't believe you're here. I need to tell you something very quick. So I walk in, and I said, Jax, who was her grandson, was sitting here playing with shells. This was just that same day. And all of a sudden, we walked out, go get dinner going. We come back, and he's putting all the shells away very nicely. And he put them in where he got them from, and they're saying, but it's not time for dinner. He said, but Nana told me to put them away. And they said, what? Nana? Did you talk to your Nana? And he said, yeah. They said, when? Just now. She told me to put him away for dinner. And they said, well, where's she at? And he pointed to where her room was at, standing in the front door. And they said they had been feeling her the whole time. So after I told them my story, it was a big cry. It was very good, though, that we knew that, she was okay. And, I still hear those whispers here every once in a while when I'm having some issues. And they're my guardian angels, and that's what they are. And they've helped me get through this whole thing. And before this, I never believed in God. I didn't believe in angels. I always said, God and I don't talk. And now I truly do believe that we do have a creator, and we do, and there are angels. And you'll see that in my writing also.
Well, that's an amazing story. I've seen the cover of your book, of course, and I see the
right
with the light, the trees, and that yep. natural light. You said it wasn't supposed to be there, but it was. That's an incredible story. Now, I assume the little boy's Nana was not with us anymore. She had passed on. She was gone.
That was Michelle, who had passed on to OD, the third person in my life that passed during
okay,
that time.
I see.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. I didn't connect that. Oh wow.
Yeah. And, you know, so I'm in contact with the family quite often because I use her a lot in a lot of poetry when I talk about the angels and things like that. And, you know, they're very happy that I keep her memory alive in that way. And it's been wonderful. I mean, that's about what I have to say about that. There's another whole story going to tell, which I'm writing a book, and it's called From the Ashes, One Father's Story of Love. And it actually explains a lot more in the detail, but what I saw, it will include all the pictures that I had taken that day and what's happened since. So.
Okay, is that going to be a poetry form too, or is that going to be?
Nope.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, everything so far has been a poetry form, right?
Right. Everything I've written has been poetry. And like I said, I was never a writer before. I couldn't even rhyme. I couldn't even draw a straight line. I couldn't write a letter. You couldn't even read my writing. And I had no formal training of any kind of poetry. I failed English quite a bit in school. And for this to come up, people just like, wow, when did you do this? I just started about 2 years ago.
It was a gift, dude.
Exactly. It was a gift given to me.
That's right.
That's right. It happened to me.
I know about it. I can testify to that myself.
How'd that happen to you?
October 2013, here at my house in Snow.
Mm-hmm.
I went to bed one night, and just like I do every night, no problem, no nothing, no illnesses, no nothing. And it was all night long as if I was going back and forth to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was in heaven all night long, back and forth, back and forth.
But what did you see?
Oh, the light you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Heaven itself. That's my first book, Seven Fish Tree.
There you go.
When I, the cover, I drew the cover, I mean, made the cover myself, and I had an artist friend I wanted to help me out with it, and I love it when you just said you can't draw a straight line, because I told him the same thing. I said, Larry, I can't draw a straight line, man. You're an artist. You've got works out there. You've sold art. Could you help me out? He said, well, first of all, you're not supposed to draw a straight line. And he said, how? You right-handed, left-handed? I said, right-handed. He said, well, put the brush in your left hand and shut up. I said, okay, whatever. But anyway, it happened to me, and that's what I write about in that book, Seven Fish Tree. It's my experience all night long, and when the voice, who I came to know in the dream or near-death experience or whatever it was, to be God, woke me at 6 a.m., with a snap of a finger, and I said, write the book, now wake up.
Wow.
Finger snapped. I wrote that entire book in less than 37 hours.
Well, you know, that's amazing. That snap in the voice you heard is exactly what happened when I was listening to what was going on around me, and it was a gift you have. Go back.
Yeah.
You're not ready yet. And, wow. That just gave me chills, man.
It's incredible because when I was writing the book, I mean, I was driven. I called the buddies of mine who were in the book initially, in the dream initially or whatever it was. It opened up with friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then this huge, beautiful tree, Richard,
mm-hmm.
The most massive and most beautiful tree you could ever imagine. And it glowed and glistened like it had ice on the leaves. I could describe the leaves, and it played this, what I found out to be later, I didn't know at the time, a celestial tune.
There you go, yep.
And then when I traveled to heaven, the same tune was there. Everything had this tune in it. I'm not talking Muzak, not at all. I'm just talking about a muted sound that's so pleasing. It's just unbelievable. And everything has it, everything. And you go into heaven, and I was describing heaven to my wife, and she was on her computer, and I was on my laptop, so we couldn't see each other's screen, let me put it that way. And I said, honey, there's this beautiful flower on the beach where I landed in heaven. She said, well, describe it for me. So I started describing it, and I didn't know this, but she was looking it up. She was Googling it. And I said, well, it looked like sea oats. Now, you know sea oats. You live in Texas. You've been to the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right. You know how spindly the stems are of it, you know?
Right.
But the top of it had a pretty heavy looking flower. Very beautiful purple. The colors in heaven.
What color did you just say?
Purple. Now, hey, Richard, the colors in heaven. And I described it to my wife, and she'd call me over. I didn't know she was doing it until she started calling me over. Look at this. I said, no, that's not it. Look at this. No, that's it. And about, I don't know how many times, 6, 8, 10 times, I don't know. I said, honey, should, how about this? She found one. I said, that's the closest. Yes, that's about it right there. And she looked at the name of it, of course, the Latin name, of course, for the plant. But the common name of it was Heavenly Flower.
Wow.
I about fell out, Richard. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Was it not the sweetest smell you've ever smelled in your life?
Oh, my gosh. It's unbelievable.
And all the lights were purple. Everything was such a beautiful purple hue. I mean, I don't think I could ever describe that purple hue, but it was the most beautiful thing you ever seen in your life.
And everything glistened, Richard. Everything was like it had this fine particles of ice.
Right.
It wasn't obtrusive, if you know what I mean. It wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was like pleasant, and it was like, well, for example, my tree, Sevenfish tree, you stand under it and you look up, and it transports you to heaven.
Wow.
You bounce through the tree like a pinball on a pinball machine, and each limb you're learning things. You see your entire past in seconds. You see the entire history of the world in seconds. You see the forming of the universe in seconds. And as you make your way to the top of the tree, when you reach the top, like the star on top of a Christmas tree, you look heavenly, and then all of a sudden, zoom, you're headed straight up. You're going through the universe. You know you're moving. You're unbelievable. And then when you reach heaven, when I did. Now, there's a lady that was on my show named Mary Hubbard. She's down at the bottom of the list. Y'all find her, Mary Hubbard. I didn't know this, but she had a similar experience when she was a young girl, and she's in her 70s now, maybe early 80s, and she had it when she was in her 20s. Similar experience, and you listen to her show, you'll hear what I'm saying. But as you go through, as you go to heaven, at a certain point in the universe, Richard, you get to total blackness. It is the scariest thing I've ever been through in my life. Total blackness. And it seemed like it lasted in a dream an eternity. It seemed like it, but it wasn't. Then a small speck of light, like a pinhole straight ahead. And you can imagine how that looks in total darkness.
Right.
And as you go toward that light, it grows so fast. And then you enter almost like an umbilical tunnel with all the light around you. And it's just so warm, and you're drifting through it, and then the same celestial sounds. And then when you exit that tunnel, I exited, and I was literally flying. I knew I was me because I felt tears.
Mm-hmm.
I felt them, and I reached, and I looked down, and I'll tell you, when I was brought into heaven the first time, I flew in, and then when I got to the beach, and I describe everything in my book, everything. And all of a sudden, my body is uprighted slowly. Then I'm kind of lower to the beach. But I never touched sand. But I felt it. But I didn't touch it. And what was odd, the oddest thing, and the lady who had the same experience, when I talked to her about what went on, she was telling me things that happened before I told her.
Mm-hmm.
I said, wow, you're freaking me out, Mary.
Did you talk, or was it like a murmuring or a whisper that you could understand?
No, it was
everything?
All telepath. It was, you spoke.
So your brain.
Yeah.
You didn't look, you couldn't move your lips. Okay.
No,
oh, that's
not
exactly
at all. You didn't have to. Didn't have to.
Right.
And
that's
exactly it.
That was
incredible, the Mary Hubbard asked me, she said, Ron, I'm going to cook your noodles, son. I said, Mary, you've already been cooking it. You're telling me things that I haven't told you yet. She said, well, I'll tell you my story when you're finished, so let me ask. She said, didn't it strike you odd? And I said, what's that? Didn't it strike you odd that you were barefooted the whole time? I said, Mary, I never told you that, but you're right. Yes.
So, but you know, I'm sitting here in chills right now. I mean, I'm really am.
Hey, it was the most. We were talking and crying together, me and this old lady. Then she told me her story, Richard. She was in her 20s. She was tired of going to college. She was a drain on her mom and dad. She was worn out from college, living at home. They couldn't afford to keep her. She was still in school. She had a part-time job. But she was just tired of school, tired of being a drain on her family. And her boss offered her a full-time job. Now, she's 20-something years old, and this is back, 60-something years ago. So you know how it was in this country for women back then, especially.
Right.
You know, so the guy she worked for said, he offered her a full-time job, said, Mary, it's a good position for a lady. You got promise with the company, you know, take the job or whatever. But right now, she said, I was happy, Ron. She said, I could quit school. I could support myself. I could get out of my family's home and quit taking from them. She said, so I quit school at the earliest possible time and started full-time. She said, she told me how many days later, maybe, I don't know how many, I don't remember, but she said she was sleeping still with her parents, and she died during the night like I did. No reason for it, no sickness, no illness, no fever, no nothing, no trauma. And she said she went to heaven, listened to my show and listened to her experience. She asked me things like this, Richard. She said, didn't you find it odd that your feet never really touched the ground or anything like that? And I said, yes, I did. She said, but you could see your footprints, couldn't you, Ron? Yeah, I could. She said, now when you got, did you see God's house? Did you see heaven, his house? I said, I sure did. She said, describe it for me. I said, well, you know what I'm going to say. She said, yeah, but I want to hear it. So I'd start telling her, then she'd add more to it. She'd tell me what I hadn't already told her. Then she said, well, how big were those doors, you know, when you went into the mansion? Wow. She said, describe the knockers for me. I said, I'd never told you they had knockers. She said, but there were, weren't there? And I told her. She said, now, when those doors opened, you didn't have to do a thing, did you? They just all of a sudden opened, didn't they? I said, yes, they did. She said, they opened inwards, too, not outwards. She said, when you walked in the great hall, describe what you saw on the walls on both sides of the hall. I said, wow, Mary, you're killing me here. She said, what color were those drapes? Oh, my God. It was, Richard, you wouldn't believe. I'm getting goosebumps now. It was incredible.
Right.
It was amazing. And that's what that book's about. It's poorly written, I admit it. That's my first book. I've never written a book. I'm an English lit major, but like you, I'm a retired cop. What do I do when I write a book? You know, give me a break. You know?
Right. Right.
So all of a sudden, I said, well, I got to write it. But he didn't tell me what to do with it, Richard.
Right.
Anyway.
You know what? That is so amazing. And yeah, a lot what you said, how you get there, everything was exactly right. And the purple hues and the smell I can still see it and smell it today. But I was not allowed in God's house at that time. I was outside of his house when it happened. And I believe it was because I did take my own life. And I believe this is my second chance to redeem myself. And he gave me a gift to do that. And, you know, I'm trying the best I can to do that. I hope I'm doing what he wants for me.
I'd say you're living up to it, Richard. That's my point of view.
Thank you. Yeah, it was amazing.
let's take a little bit of a break. We'll be right back. We'll talk some more about this. We can go get into poetry in a little while, maybe.
Okay.
Z-Man, you ready to do this thing? Just hold on, Richard. We're going to do a few little things, then we'll be right back. All right?
Bye. Okay. I'll be here.
Ernest Hemingway, William Faulkner, Mark Twain, Harper Lee. Some of our most beloved writers came from the South, and still do. Southern Writers Magazine takes you up close with best-selling authors, sharing their secrets of success in writing and promotion. In each inspiration-packed issue, you'll find your favorite writers and meet a few new ones. Whether you read good books or want to write them, subscribe at SouthernWritersMagazine.com today. Southern Writers, the author's magazine.
The new release, Without From Within, Poems by Ron Shaw, is a must-read. One reviewer wrote, "The depth and imagery of these poems is of surpassing beauty. They flow and blossom from the pages, even as they rip the soul. This volume should be in every poem lover's library. Inspiring and fabulous." Another reviewer wrote, "The best poems are not just the ones that touch us through great turns of phrase, but the ones that tell a story to keep our mind reeling." Ron Shaw delivers on both counts with wonderful, concise tales from the whimsical to the existential, the dramatic to the heart-wrenching. Whether it is the social commentary of the dull or the relentless and intimate strength of the pulse, Shaw will keep you glued to the page with his thought-provoking verse. You won't want to miss Without From Within, Poems by Ron Shaw, available at Amazon.com in English, as an audiobook and in paperback, and in both English and French as an ebook.
Hi, Ron. This is Dorothy Mae Mercer over at Mercer Publications. We want to thank your listeners for their support of our series of how-to books for authors. The latest one is How to Register ISBN Numbers and Copyrights. 99 cents for the ebook. For details, just hop over to mercerpublications.com.
You are listening to the Shaw Show Redemption Hour, the Ron Shaw Show on Artist First Radio. All past shows are archived. You can pick them up at artistfirst.com. Now back to your host, Ron Shaw.
Hey, welcome back, folks. I'm talking with Richard M. Niddle, Jr. He's an award-winning poet. And let me, we're having this is a great conversation, Richard.
That's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
And I'll tell you what. This, you know, I have authors on. We talk books. We talk about, what we're writing, what we're doing next, what the projects are, and everything, and that's all fine and dandy. Believe me, it is. But when I get a chance to connect with someone on a different level, like we're doing now, that's when this show's special to me.
Right.
That's when this show, it eclipses, you know, other ones, because we're talking about real stuff. Our books are real. Don't get me wrong. You know, I write poetry. You write poetry. You write it very well. I'm just starting.
You're great, Ron. I love. I really did. Your first book, when I read it and you gave it to me, I was amazed, because you know, you're right. There's good. There's bad. There's indifferent. I don't think poetry should ever be judged, because how do you judge someone's heart and soul? And that's what a poet's putting on paper. But you're right. You've been there, and I can see where you've been as I have been, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to read. Even though we write different types of poetry, it's beautiful to see that, and I enjoy reading your stuff very much. I've read all of it.
Thank you, Rich. I mean, that first time I met you, and you sent me your epic poem. you did, and I liked the poetry. I loved it. The illustrations too. I even dug those. You know, and I read that thing nonstop. I did the whole thing, sitting there, and stayed up late to do it. And I've always loved poetry. I always have, and even in school when I was, you know, English lit major, and I enjoyed poetry, still do. But the deal is that nothing else I've written, no other book other than Seven Fish Tree, the first one that was given to me, like your life was given back to you. And it was given back by a higher power that lets you know, Richard Niddle, you're not finished yet. There's redeeming you can be doing. There's redemption for you. You got a second chance. Don't squander it. And that's kind of like what I was told, basically. You know, I mean, that's the way I took it, too. And the lady mirrors on my show, she told me, Richard, she said, gosh, she told me so many things. If you listen to that show, it just give you goosebumps city. Because she said, I talked to her the night I finished the book, I think it was, or the next night. I thought I'd finish with it. It's done. I did it. Lord, I did the book. I'm finished. I did it, okay? I had to get it out. And I talked with her and told her the brief version of it. I didn't give her the long version because I was tired. I was worn out. And she said, son, let me tell you something. You'll never stop writing. Did you know that? I'm going to tell you right now, Richard, you'll never stop.
Oh, no, not even close. Even when I think I want to, it keeps coming.
She told me, son, the day you die, there'll be another chapter in your head, another book. There'll be something else you got to get down on paper, on that computer. That's what God gave you. Now, that blew my mind. I said, no, don't tell me that. Because this writing, I could see in your epic poem, it was like me writing my first book. It was like glass in my brain at times.
Mm-hmm.
It's painful.
Well, it still
it's
is.
Hard to write. A lot of these poems I know are hard to write. Mine are too, because the deal is no other form of literature, like I was trying to get across, lays you so open, so barren to everything you have is just laid out there. Just look at me. Look at everything. Here. I'm not telling you I got a heart and soul. I'm showing it to you. And that's what it's like for me. That's what poetry is. It goes to levels that writing just doesn't even get close to.
Right. It does. And, you know, every poet that out there, you know, poets are very special, and I believe that wholeheartedly now. And every poet out there, it's a gift from God. You know, every poet I've ever talked to, including you, and all around the world, who I've talked to many poets, we're here for a reason, because poetry is a healing power for ourselves first. I mean, we have to heal. And what we're writing down is coming directly from our souls. And I tell people, you know, I'm more of a soul writer, I guess, than a poet, because as I'm writing, I have tears. I mean, it's not, I mean, the whole thing, I am bawling my eyes out at a lot of my poetry. And by the time I'm done, I'm so tired and I'm worn, but I'm happy on the inside, and people just absolutely love it, because I bear everything. I do not hide anything. I do not hold anything back. And I know you can see it in my poetry. And I'm finally, this couple last months, I said, you know what? I guess I can write pretty well. And I've been writing about world peace, because that's what I'm after right now. And a lot of poets are headed that way. And I'm asking a lot of poets to try to do that. And because that's what we need right now. And the whole thing with world peace is, and we talk about world peace, but you know what? World peace will never happen until we can find peace within ourselves first. And that's what, as poets, we have found peace within ourselves, and that's why we are able to put it down on paper to get it out for the world. And when we write that down on paper for the world heals when they read that too. Because everybody out there has been through the same experiences that we have. They just don't know how to get it out. And so we're healing ourselves and a broken world at the same time. And I truly believe that.
Well, that's a pretty lofty project, but it's one to tell you.
You know, I think
peace
is possible.
Written, Richard, you've got a lot of words to go for that one. Yeah,
we do.
I understand what you're saying. It's mine started. I had a friend that's been on the show a couple times. I've been on hers. She wanted me to contribute something for a project she was doing for one of her podcasts or broadcasts. She was going to do read things from people who she knows who've been on her show, and she was going to put it together. And she asked me if I'd like to contribute, and I said, yeah, I'd be happy to do. So I was going to write a little short story thing, a little small thing, you know, a few hundred words, 500-600 words or whatever. And I got the flu. I was sick. And so I told her, I said, how about if I write a poem? I haven't written one, you know. She said, that'd be great. And I said, well, how about you know, I'll let you pick. Give me three words, and I'll write a poem from those three words. She said, really? And I said, yeah. Give me three words. And she didn't hesitate, man. She went, boom. She gave me the three words. And that's the first poem I wrote, and I sent it to her, and she performed it on her show. She did from the other people who had contributed stuff. But I included the three words that she gave me in the poem. And the poem, the basis of the poem, actually is from those three words. Mm-hmm. They just weren't thrown in there willy-nilly, you know. And anyway, she liked it. I liked it, too. And that started it, and then the floodgates came, you know.
Right.
And so I kept, and I got my second one out now. My second poetry book is
What were the three words, Rob?
Huh?
What were those three words?
Solitude, longing, and I can't remember the other one. But the name of the poem is Woe. It's in my first poetry book, Without From Within. And it's a solitude. I can't remember the third one. But anyway, she, something like 100 and something poems later.
Right.
You know what I mean.
Oh, I do know, because I couldn't repeat one poem I've ever written, and I've written thousands of them.
Oh, I mean, know. He's like, oh, golly. It's like, oh, wow. You know, I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to let you read some of your poetry. I'm not going to read mine because let me tell you what. Spring has sprung in the South. I know it's hotter than you know what in Texas all the time, pretty much. But here, I think pollen is like unbelievable. It's like, you know, like you've seen what in India where they do the colored powder and stuff, throw it on each other and all that stuff.
Right.
That's what it's like here now. The yellow, oh, gosh, killing me. So
it's here too, believe me. As you can tell, I can say I have a very, Ryder has it, Renee has it. We're all sitting here sniffling.
Oh, yeah, so I was going to read a poem or two, but I said, no, I am not at the computer. I'm reclining. I'm trying to get my sinuses cleared up. So, Richard, you can, hey, pick some poems, sir. Read some poems if you want to. Right ahead. You can, do the build-up. Do what you want to do. The floor is yours, young man.
Thank you very much. As far as the peace process, and you're saying it's going to take a long time, this is funny because I woke up one morning and I was smiling and happy, and I had this dream, and a date was in my head. And I just started, I was in the car, and Renee was like, what are you doing? I'm like, she goes, it's not work time. You know, because I write all the time on my phone, so I have some time where I have to put the phone down and, you know, be family. So it's called February 22nd. 2028. I woke up this morning and not a single war was to be found. Peace had broken out in all the countries and in every single town. Not a single shot was fired today in anger and hate, for the world had finally given peace a chance on this very peaceful day. The color of a man's skin we had finally all forgot, and the only colors we now know were from rainbows and the crayons in their box. All the homeless people had found a warm place to live. Nobody around the world went hungry and had enough food and drink to live. All religions around the world held each other's hands to pray. What a wonderful world we lived in on this very special day. The world had come together to teach about only love, hoping to heal our broken world and to erase all the hate. Brought together by a poet's dream who knew peace was possible before it was too late. To share this dream to everyone, to let people know everywhere, to give peace a chance. On February 22nd, 2028. And, you know, it went crazy.
Yeah, I know. I read it several times. Commented on it several times. Hey, you know, world peace, dude. Look, I was going to tell you. I got some good news today. You see, having you on the show, Richard, brought good news.
Okay.
My first poetry book, Without From Within, is now audio book available.
That's wonderful.
And I got this guy to read it, you know, through, you know, with Amazon stuff. And anyway, oh, my gosh, the guy, he made me cry with my own poetry while he's reading it, you know. He performed.
Send me his name, would you?
Yeah, you want? I can. Yeah,
I have not gone that far yet, and I really should.
Oh,
you know.
Let me tell you, you go through Amazon Kindle ACX, And yeah, you need to do that, Richard, because I like to write. I throw a little bit of funny stuff in, you know, just to break the mood. And I put photographs in mine. My brother-in-law takes these beautiful photographs of plants and animals and insects and birds and stuff. And he's been doing this for years, so he has thousands of them. So I've used his photographs in both of my poetry books. And it's sort of like a break with, like you say, when it's really heavy stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing is you're unloading the baggage in a 747, you know.
Right.
Look, exactly. I got some baggage, folks. Let's get some off my back here. And so I'll put a photograph in there, but I like to write some humorous ones every now and again just to kind of break up the monotony. Very few love things with me, a couple of them here and there, very few, because I've been kind of, not me really. But anyway, I wrote one, and he performed it, and he's an actor, the guy I chose.
Right.
He acts too, and it's got parts in it, and I'm in a project where I grew up, and in a government project, and I'm having a conversation with King Roach.
Right.
In our apartment, the King Roach is begging me for food scraps, and I'm telling him to be gone, we have none to give because we don't have any food. But the Roach is not happy with that, so he proceeds in a nice way to threaten me with all of his forces, his thousands of soldiers, his pawns. And I let him know, we're bigger than you. He said, well, you better wear those socks and pull them up high. Don't go to sleep barefooted because we'll be after you. It's a good poem. It's funny. It's hilarious. And it's two parts. And he played them. He acted them both out. In my new book, Traverses, I got one with a king toad. I tell a story about a king toad who comes upon me, a little kid. He's out fishing, and toad comes up and starts talking to the boy, you know. And the boy says, wow, you can talk. Well, I sure can, young man, you know. And the toad tells him, answer three questions right, and I'll give you three wishes. And so he'd already asked me a couple questions, and so I answered those two right off. He said, you're pretty slick, young man. One more question, and you win the prize. So, but this one's a little harder. So he asked me a harder question, you know. It's a funny poem, okay? I'll just put it that way.
And I think I actually have read that one, and I was funny. Yeah. It was very, very well. It was done good.
Yeah, the king toad. He thought he had me. He got me. But yeah, I write some humorous ones just to throw them in there. But
I try to write humorous ones, and they turn right around into some beautiful love poem, you know. And it's like, what? Wait a minute, it's supposed to be funny, not love. I don't get that. I have tried. I guess my love life is funny, so that's why that's what happens, I guess.
Well, my daughter, you know, look, folks, if you write, don't tell your family you write. Trust me on this.
You're going to be writing birthday cards every year.
That's right. Don't let your family members know you're writing anything. Trust me, because there are no more brutal people in the world than family members when you're writing, okay?
Except for Mom.
Everybody's a critic. Everybody's a critic. Even my cat is a critic. But anyway.
Everyone I write, though, my mom, I love my mother to death.
Oh, well, your mom, yeah.
She, everything I write is the most beautiful poem she ever write. And I keep, Mom, wow, is that the most beautiful one or the last one? They're all just beautiful. You're so good. And, you know, and I write them to my mom a lot, too. And I do post those, and they're very personal. But, you know, I had a shout out to my mom, who I know is listening right now, and thank you, Mom, for everything.
Well, you know, that's what mothers are for. I wish mine was still here. I'd let her read them,
right,
and read them to her. But yeah, exactly. That's what mothers. But now, I've had people to show this. Like, yeah, my husband, my wife, they're my best support. I'm going, really, really? They actually read your stuff, and they do. Well, my husband's an editor too. Oh, okay.
I wish I had an editor. I really do.
Yeah, me too. Hey,
I'm the worst speller in the entire world, and you'll see that every once in a while.
You know, one of my editors told me, one of the editors I know, and publishers, she told me.
What?
She said, well, Ron, you know, your poetry book, I don't guess there's much editing with it. I said, exactly. Right.
Poetry doesn't need to be edited.
If I want a comma, I'll put it there. If I don't, it won't be there.
Thank you.
And that, whatever, that is I got my last poem in this book, Richard. You'll appreciate this. I know you will. The last poem in my new book, Traverses. I do one on, the last one's on heaven.
Uh-huh.
I think the next last one's paradise. But in the heaven one, I end it, and I use the word affinity.
Oh, okay.
With an A. And I say affinity and far, far beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've had two people, a publisher and another writer, let me know that, are you sure that's the word you want?
I love that.
Yeah, and I said, yes, that's the word I want. Now, let me tell you why. Well, shouldn't it be infinity? I said, well, not really, because I don't want to steal something from Star Trek to begin with, you know. And
right.
Secondly, there's nothing beyond infinity. In fact, that's contradiction. Infinity means nothing else beyond. I said, so
right.
No, I wouldn't put infinity and far, far beyond. But if you look up the definition of affinity, there's a second part of it that says a oneness.
Okay, right.
The relationship that can be between plants, animals, people, whatever, an affinity, a oneness. That's what the poem is about. In heaven, we all become one.
That's true. You're right. All of one kin. All of, and I write that in mine also.
You should change that. Nope, not changing it. I'll defend it every time. I chose it on purpose. That's why I did it, because that's what the poem's about. You realize that everything and everybody is connected.
They are. They are, really are. And that's why this whole thing with colors and the hate and the prejudice of the world, why? We are all from one kin, and
yes, we are.
That's what people need to understand. And my epic, you know, I'm an epic poet. I'm a poet, but I'm also an epic poet. And my girlfriend, I should say, she was my wife. Now she's my girlfriend.
All right.
tells me all the time, can you make them a little shorter? I don't have all day to keep reading these things. I'm going all day long, and.
Epic, dear.
That's right. I'm an epic poet. I cannot write anything that's less than like 1,000 words on a poem. And so I have a few of them out there. And I think you've seen them before. And it's called "To Heal the Broken World." There are actually two poems that I've written at two separate times, but for the same poem. One is called "I Saw God the Other Day."
Yeah.
And one was "I Talked to the Devil," which is the other side.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's funny because I put the same. I didn't use affinity. I put we're all of one kin. So I tell poets, poets are the same mind and soul, and we are. And we think a lot. We think everything's the same.
Tell your girlfriend, your ex-wife, not your girlfriend. Tell her that. See, you know, Moses, that 40 years in the desert. That's kind of like worthy of epic poetry.
Right.
Hey,
and
okay.
When you go on stage, you have to cut it down. So I usually do about half of it, and then I get all these people, wonderful people, coming up going, well, I want to hear the next. I really would like to hear that part. And I'm like, well, they won't let me back up on stage, but you can go here and read it.
There you go.
It's been wonderful.
Hey, okay, we're at the top of the hour. Man, this hour flew, Richard.
It did.
It was fun having you on. Thanks for coming back. Thanks
every
for giving
time.
A guest again, Richard. Man, you're all right. Yeah, I love your poetry. And keep knocking them out, dude. Hug Rider for me, would you?
I sure will. I will.
And now next week, folks, tune in next Monday night, and my guest is going to be another poet. He's an author, and he's an ex-FBI. He's the ex-Fed. Christopher Zizi. And if you check him out on Twitter and Facebook, you'll see he writes a lot of
he's wonderful. He really
reviews.
Is.
Yeah, he reviews movies
good.
A lot. And, Richard, tell folks real quick where they can find you, because we can get the plug pulled on us, I can tell you.
I'm on Facebook under Richard M.Nell Jr. And if you really want to read all the poetry, it's under Facebook, and it's called Poetry Because It Matters. And Twitter, I'm at The Battle Lost. I'm on LinkedIn under Richard M.Nell Jr. Google under Richard. I'm everywhere. I've got like 40,000 Twitter followers now, and 15,000 LinkedIn connections.
I know, man. You're everywhere, dude. All right, Richard. Thanks a lot, buddy. Thanks for being on.
Thank you very much.
All right, good night, folks. Have a good night. See y'all later. Bye.